The port of Coos Bay will become a much busier place if the Jordan Cove terminal is built. The plan now calls for a natural gas pipeline across southwest Oregon to the terminal. The gas would be liquefied there for transport on ships overseas. This should sound familiar. The plan has been out there for years, but it started life as a plan for an import terminal bringing gas in from overseas. The intention has changed, but the opposition to it has been fairly constant. The pipeline is of particular concern to conservation groups. They recently got an audience with Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber. Here's a chance to catch up on the meeting and the issues involved. Two guests with us. Forrest English is in the studio, the program director for Rogue Riverkeeper. Forrest, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good to have you here. And by phone, we're talking to Nathan Matthews, who's a staff attorney at the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, good morning.
So from the beginning, I mean, who is it who wants to build Jordan Cove? And obviously the premise has changed, but the desire to have the terminal there and the pipeline to it is fairly constant. And how long has this all been in the works?
Since around 2005, they've been proposing an import terminal, which, you know, due to economics, morphed into an export terminal, which is what we're looking at now.
Morphed because of what?
Well, primarily because of the rapid increase in fracking and availability of natural gas in the United States.
So I wouldn't exactly call this a win-win situation, Nathan Matthews, for the likes of the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program.
Yeah, we don't see much of any win coming out of this project. You know, as Forrest mentioned, we have seen in the U.S. a boom in fracking with a huge increase in gas production. And this project now would, if built, spur still further gas production, both in the Northern Rockies and also in British Columbia.
So it is because of that gas production now that we're talking about piping the gas to Coos Bay, having it liquefied there, and then put on ships and sent overseas.
Right. And so Sierra Club's involvement in this is both based on our concerns about the gas production that would occur and, you know, the members that we have living in those areas, but also the pipeline is going to have to cross, you know, the entire state and have impacts associated with crossing the national forest, timbered areas, stream crossings, and then the actual project at the Coos Bay site is a major infrastructure project, which will have its own dedicated gas-fired power plant, which will have significant air emissions and tremendous climate emissions, greenhouse gases associated with processing a pipeline gas, liquefying it, sending it overseas, and then eventually burning it in the end-use market.
There are those people, though, who claim that natural gas is of less environmental impact than, for example, burning coal or burning oil.
Well, I think what we're here to talk about really is that some of the more recent science has assessed some of those numbers and said that the calculations that have been previously used may not be correct. You know, the government has been assessing the leakage rates of methane at the natural gas drilling sites. And methane is a much more powerful greenhouse gas than, say, carbon dioxide. So small leakage is going to make a much bigger difference. And the government has been estimating leakage rates at around 1.3 to 1.6% leakage. And recent studies from Harvard, Stanford, and some of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's work has estimated leakage rates much higher, starting at 3%, going up to perhaps 9%.
So is the primary concern of the Rogue Riverkeeper program, your program, Forrest, generally with the river crossings? I mean, we're talking 230 miles of pipeline from a gas, what was a conjunction of gas lines at Malin, right?
Yeah, Malin. It's near Klamath Falls. So, I mean, we're talking 230 miles of pipeline that would cross nearly 400 streams, rivers, and, you know, numerous wetlands as well. You know, the impacts from that are pretty big. This is second only to Interstate 5 as an infrastructure project in the state of Oregon. So it's a pretty large undertaking. You know, then the impacts from the direct crossings there and damaged estuaries and things like that are, of course, a concern. But also, salmon need cold water to thrive, and that's something that we're deeply concerned about. And a warming climate certainly makes it more challenging to find that cold water.
The methodology here, though, we're talking, you mentioned Interstate 5 as a comparison, but this is not going to be nearly as wide as Interstate 5, right?
We'd be talking about a permanently cleared area about 100 feet in diameter. So we're talking something that would be maintained like that permanently.
For a 3-foot pipeline, is it?
For a 3-foot, in diameter buried pipeline. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, but I mean, given the recent gains in some kinds of technologies, in fact, I've watched guys put pipes under my house with horizontal drilling. It doesn't disturb much of the stuff over the surface. I mean, is there a chance this could be done in a way that would be sensitive enough, you think, to be friendly to the streams?
Well, they're only proposing to do horizontal drilling at the largest of river crossings. For anything smaller, they would just dig a big trench, slap the pipeline in it, and put it back, you know, put the gravels and dirt back on top. For those larger river crossings, one of the concerns, of course, is frack outs, which is if you're doing a drill and you get the drill bit stuck, or, you know, there's something that fractures the rock underneath the river, you know, that can have a pretty serious effect on the river morphology, as well as, you know, kind of an uncontrolled release of the fluids they use while drilling. You know, drilling mud is not actually just mud. And that's something that I think we have to take into consideration when saying that, you know, horizontal drilling is totally safe and everything, because it certainly can have other impacts.
We're talking about the Jordan Cove project proposed for Coos Bay, the gas export terminal and the 230-mile pipeline to it, with Forrest English from Rogue Riverkeeper and Nathan Matthews from the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program. You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Is there an official pipeline route at this point, Nathan Matthews?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Is there an official pipeline route chosen at this point? I mean, they said it's specifically going to go here across these properties, you know, et cetera.
I believe that they've... I don't think that there's a public official pipeline route at this point. They may have chosen some of that, but it still is being treated as confidential information before FERC. Forrest may know more detail than I have, than I do on that one, but I don't believe that they've made the whole route public.
Yeah, we've actually asked for that information, and the agencies are specifically denying it because Jordan Cove and Pacific Connector have requested that they deny that information to us.
FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, one of several layers of licensing and approval that have to go with this project. So, I mean, is it very close? Is it still several years away? I mean, how many different levels of approval still have to be met?
I mean, quite a few. They still need to go through hoops with the National Environmental Policy Act for the pipeline route itself, and that's through FERC. And then there's a slew of other federal and state permits and authorizations that they need to get. You know, that we've been waiting the draft environmental impact statement, which is kind of the big analysis of this project from FERC. And we've been hearing that'll be ready any day now for about the last year. So coming soon, but timeline's a little fuzzy.
All right. So, that's one. So they have to come out with a draft environmental impact statement. Does FERC give a license to this as well?
Nathan might be able to talk about licenses for FERC. Yeah.
So the federal licensing for LNG projects is a little convoluted. FERC has authority over actually building the equipment that you need. So the site and construction and operation of the terminal itself, also the pipeline, and FERC acts as the lead agency for the environmental review of all of the coordinated federal permits for the project. Separate from that, the main federal authorization that they need is the Department of Energy has jurisdiction over actually selling natural gas from the U.S. to a foreign buyer. So if you can build a terminal, which is the FERC authorization, but if you actually want to sell the gas to another country, you need the DOE authorization as well. And the DOE, at the time that Jordan Cove's application was filed, was doing a split process where DOE did a conditional authorization that explicitly did not consider any of the environmental impacts. Jordan Cove got that authorization already. But DOE has stated that it will wait until FERC finishes, and then DOE will revisit the environmental impacts of the project and decide whether it concludes that the project as a whole, balancing environmental and economic impacts, is in the public interest.
There's some interesting nuances in law here that you just hinted at. You can export domestic natural gas, but you can't export, is that right, domestic oil?
Well, there's a similar process for domestic oil where the default answer is no, but the agencies do have some authority to grant a few waivers for that. And so I think that there have been a couple of permits for oil export granted since the 70s when that legal framework was put in place. But, you know, as with natural gas, you can can't do anything at all until you get a specific license. And I think that the licenses for oil have been harder to get than the licenses for natural gas.
All right, let's take some calls here. We have Steve and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Jordan Cove, the gas terminal proposed for Coos Bay, with Nathan Matthews and Forrest English. Hi, Steve.
Buddy, in terms of building pipelines, haven't we already been there, done that to an extent with the supposed import pipeline, and it turned out to be an environmental disaster resulting in tens of thousands of dollars in fines? And, you know, how do we know that this new one isn't going to be any more disastrous?
You're talking about an existing pipeline, Steve, with fines?
Originally, they were going to build a pipeline from Coos Bay down to California to import the gas. And they at least got started on it. I don't know if they ever finished it, but it turned out to be just environmentally a disaster.
All right, let's find out what we can. Thanks for the call and the question, Steve. Appreciate that. Was there a pipeline started, Forrest English, to your knowledge?
As far as the last proposal, it was never constructed. FERC never authorized it, and it never, or excuse me, FERC authorized it, but they never began construction because of other issues.
All right, so, but that was a different route from what we're talking about here?
It's pretty much the same route.
Really?
You know, and while we're on the topic of authorizations, the state still has a pretty wide range of authority here to consider impacts to Oregon's waterways, you know, both from filling and removing material from those waterways, wetlands and streams, as well as any impact it may have on the water quality. Oregon actually has pretty broad authority to deny those permits if there may be any effect on any negative impact to Oregon's waterways.
So there was this recent meeting at the governor's office about a month ago, was it?
Maybe a little bit longer than that.
All right. And then who was in the meeting with the governor?
We actually were meeting with the governor's staff.
Mm-hmm. Not the governor himself.
Correct.
Got it. All right. So what was the presentation? How did you get the meeting?
I think largely we have been trying to talk with them about some of our, you know, assessments of natural gas and the impacts thereof. You know, saying that maybe exporting gas from Oregon and bearing the burden of those environmental damages may not be the best path for something that may not really benefit Oregon in a lot of ways. You know, and I think largely we wanted to go over some of the fairly recent climate issues and the studies that have come out about them.
Including what? I mean, what are some of the new features that you're showing up, the new bullet points that have emerged?
Well, I think there's been a fairly recent reassessment of how much methane is really leaking at the drill sites and how much methane is leaking throughout the transport chain, you know, from pipelines to gasification to tankers to shipping it overseas. And I think those numbers have been severely underestimated by the federal government in the past, and I think still are. But there's new information that we hope the decision makers will integrate into those assessments.
We're talking again about the Jordan Cove gas liquefaction plant planned for Coos Bay, which would include a 230-mile pipeline across southwestern Oregon, including several river crossings to get to it. Forrest English is in the studio. He's the program director at Rogue Riverkeeper. Nathan Matthews is on the phone, staff attorney at the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program. You can join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey. I'd like to talk very briefly about the fracking fluid and then give you a brief story of my experience with the leaks. The fracking fluid people claim that they don't want to reveal the poisons they're pumping underground because the company's secret. Well, Jeffrey, all those people who are doing fracking have the secret. The secret they're keeping is the poisons that they are depositing into our underground storage that are inevitably going to leak into our aquifers. And the hubris that, oh, we'll just pump this poison beyond our site, that's like washing your transmission in your kitchen sink and saying, oh, look, now everything's clean and that fluid is now in your septic system ruining it. it is just disgusting that they are getting away with not allowing the public to know the poisons they're putting into our aquifers. And then, Jeffrey, a brief comment. Once upon a time, I worked briefly on a drilling rig. It was an exploratory rig near Danville, California. Jeffrey, we hit a pocket where we were losing our mud, and we're talking a drill about a foot wide. Jeffrey, for 3 solid days and nights, 24/7, we did nothing but move filler from pallets, dumping it down that hole. It took us 3 solid days before we were able to contain that leak, and that one was only 1 foot wide. If you're drilling a 3 foot wide hole under a river and you hit a fault line like that, it is never going to be sealed. This is a terrible, terrible environmental disaster waiting to happen, and standing around watching the river disappear and our ecosystem be ruined, and these people are going to be scratching their head and say, gee, I'm sure glad I got my last check because I'm going to need a different job. It is just criminal.
All right. Thanks for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate it. Nathan Matthews, you're probably involved a bit with trying to figure out what's in those fracking fluids. Is that still a secret? Are they still maintaining this needs to be kept secret? And are they getting protection from law?
Well, generally they will tell us most of what's in the fluid, but then, the last couple percent of whatever it is are often claimed as a trade secret. And that's presumably the part we particularly want to know about. TRFLUB's position is that there should be no trade secret exemptions for frack fluid disclosures, that if you want to pump anything into the ground, you should have to tell everybody what it is. As of right now, some states have, many states have adopted disclosure rules, but none of them has that blanket requirement that you disclose everything with no possibility of trade secret withholdings. So the state of the law on that is not where it needs to be. And more broadly, talking about the risks that you were alluding to, that's our concern with LNG exports, is that fracking is dangerous, and it creates environmental risks that are borne by the public in the U.S., but that the benefits are going to accrue just to the companies that own the gas or are doing the gas drilling or that are running the liquefaction plant, whereas the rest of the country is going to pay higher gas prices, so that there's a very lopsided distribution of public, environmental, and economic costs and concentrated economic benefits.
Okay, let's take a few more calls. We have Drew and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Jordan Cove with Nathan Matthews and Forrest English.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on other benefits for this project. That one thing it would do would increase the level of safety in other ships that are being handled at Coos Bay. Presently at Coos Bay, the pilot boat that's operated out of there is a single-screw boat, and it's the only boat on the West Coast pilot boat that has a single engine. You can imagine in wintertime, if that engine fails, the lives of those people are really at stake. So the revenue generated by this project would help to upgrade that pilot boat and make a safer operation. And also the tugs that are presently handling ships in Coos Bay are inadequate and old, and essentially they're junk. And with this new operation, proposed new operation in Coos Bay, the tugs available to handle other ships, and these ships are Panamax vessels, exceeding 600 feet in length. It would really increase the level of safety in other ship handling at Coos Bay. So
you think it's a good thing? It'll make things safer at the port of Coos Bay generally?
Well, absolutely. It'll increase the level of safety in ship handling for other vessels. That's no question about it. And
right.
Also the number of jobs that will be provided. That when these ships are loading alongside the berths, there are tugs that have to be in standby position. And you can imagine most of the crewmen in there is 100,000, 150,000 a year for, five crewmen on these tugs. Mm-hmm. So it's...
All right,
there are some really good benefits from this.
All right, we'll count you among those benefits. We're going to take another call here because we're running short on time. Brad in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, people tend to think that the leaking is the only impact of climate change, but natural gas itself still has half the power to affect our climate as does coal and oil. So it's not a totally clean fuel. It's just a little bit better. And then if either of these gentlemen know whether Oregon can tax the gas that would be going through this to help pay for other things that are the consequence of it, or rent for the use of the land.
Let us find out. Thanks for those questions, Brad. Appreciate it. So, Forrest, you were shaking your head a bit about some of that. So, first of all, on taxes.
I was just going to talk about safety briefly. I mean, I think it's important to weigh any potential jobs and potential benefits in Coos Bay with the fact that the company that wants to build this has had 3 accidents with their natural gas facilities this year alone where they exploded and injured workers. And we're talking about placing a facility like this in a tsunami zone where it would have a 4-mile blast zone, which includes most of North Bend. So I think it's important to weigh some of those potential safety, increases with the very real possibility that earthquakes or tsunamis could cause a pretty serious accident in Coos Bay.
All right, so that addresses the jobs and safety part. Now, about what Brad was saying about can you tax the gas coming through the pipeline, I thought I saw you shake your head no.
Well, we can't currently.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
All right. So where do things go from here? You're waiting for the environmental impact statement to drop any day now, basically?
Yeah, I think that's that. And I think the other point to take in mind is the state of Oregon recently denied a coal terminal permit because it didn't meet the highest and best use of the waterway. And I think that's something that could be very relevant and a decision that could be made around any LNG export terminal, either in Coos Bay or on the Columbia.
Much more coming on the Jordan Cove project. We will we'll talk about that in a future edition of the Jefferson Exchange. I want to thank Forrest English from the Rogue River Keeper Program and Nathan Matthews from the Sierra Club Environmental Law Program for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That'll do it for this hour. Hour number 2, we'll talk about the collapse of Western civilization, looking back from the future.